It's always nice to have some kind of introduction to what this kind of conversation or discovery might be about. But it's not always necessary. We could say that the principle, if not soul, quality of whatever we refer to as living is, could simply be spoken of as being with. In all of our processing of experience, we do so within the context of being with. As long as there are impressions, memories and thoughts, tasks, associations, strategies, entertainment, illuminations of all kinds, then we are being with, we are attendant to, happily or otherwise, to the presence of experience. Quite often, you could say by default, our capacity or familiarity with being with is through the thinking mind, through the companion of personification. So the presentation of whatever living is through association, thought and association, the assigning of preference, meaning, implication, what to do or what not to do with the artifacts of our imagination and the seeming artifacts of what is occurring in the real, meaning the sensual world of activity and sensation. So regardless of our spiritual or secular background or interests, we could boil it all down just for fun to this curious being with, the simplicity of being with. If I'm watching TV, I'm being with. If I'm out to dinner, I'm being with. If I'm working, I'm being with. If I'm ruminating on a park bench, I'm being with. If I'm driving and sleeping and any activity, any and all activity, you could even include sleep and deep sleep, is a being with. So we can't seem to separate the presence of our own consciousness, the presence of our own attention, from the objects and impulses that appear in that attention. The data stream that pours in through the senses, including what we call mind and imagination, is nothing less than profound. Perhaps overwhelming, perhaps boring, perhaps full of emotion and sentiment of all kinds. Inspiration to do or not do. I don't think it's that difficult to see or to consider that the movement of association and acquisition and the strategizing that appears in mind and imagination is a A, all being with, and a B, to take a leap, happening all of its own accord. Yeah. So if this incredible presentation of experience is arising all of its, say, own accord, all of its own volition, miraculously so, ordinarily so, then perhaps we can touch a startled moment where the continuity of the will, preference, choice, decision-making momentarily abates. So if I take the presumption of myself out of the equation of being with, then you could say the root of experience is a pure fascination, pure surprise, unadulterated experience appearing in all of the sense windows and ways that it appears without narration. And without narration, then the foundation upon which the continuity of self relies falls out the bottom. Yes, you see, it's the movement of narration, which is both the discernment, association, and accusation, acquisition of experience through language that lightens up what we might refer to as myself. Yes. So without the narration, the presentation of experience in any and all ways that it is so, subtly and otherwise, without narration, then there's no continuity of self. Without narration, there is the softening or absence of psychological time. Now, it's not necessary to have a silent mind, meaning when I suggest without narration, to be willfully without words and symbols. It's subtler than that. Narration is fine, and occurs just like any or other sense impulses arise in experience. Behind narration, or behind the apparent consciousness that hears or authors the narration, behind that, behind the appearance of the author or recipient of narration, there is, let's just call it for fun, attention. What if there is no author of narration or author of thinking? And what if there is no recipient of the outgassing of thinking? So there's neither author nor recipient, but the thinking occurs in the way that it does, referential, naming of objects, planning and strategizing, presumption of self and time, continuity of experience. So that can all persist in the way that it does. But behind it all, and behind is a strange word, we're not speaking spatially, of course, subtly, maybe behind is more subtle than, there is, let's just refer to it as pure attention, that is capable of, you could say, noting or noticing, without fanfare, all that appears in the presentation of being with. Yes. So there's an inclusivity. Tension, naked attention is inclusive. It's non-directional. So everything appears just in this miraculous inclusivity, which has is neither author nor recipient, and does not suggest self, does not suggest individuation or separation. Pure attention, we could say, as it matures, as one becomes familiar and more intimately acquainted with it, has no problem, no problem weaning itself from the objects that appear in it, including the sense of the subjective I. Yeah, even the subjective I is seen by naked attention to be more mirth and myth than anything you could write home about. So naked attention is capable of weaning itself from narration, weaning itself from object identification, from motive, strategy, past, present, future. It's just behind all that, more subtle than anything that could appear experientially, naked attention is untouched. Dare I say, unimpressed with all that appears. And that includes, you know, the sense of one's physicality, beliefs, superstitions, what's right and wrong with the world, how I'm being taken advantage of, or how I'm taking advantage of others, you know, political, climate, economic, you name it. You know, 7.6, how many are we? 7.6 billion, you know, marching into a severe and unpredictable climactic disruption. Now, that's fun. And there already is a tremendous amount of unreconcilable and unmanageable suffering. Of course, more to come. And the inability of our you know, political systems or our very consciousness to cope with geophysical and climactic change at the level that we are now being faced with is incomprehensible. We don't have the capacity to respond to it. Hello. Yeah, so it's so here we are on the verge of a rather giant shit show. So it might be useful, not that self-realization is intended to be an ameliorative or a medication or a destination or a solution of any kind, but as the crescendo and intensity of confusion, geopolitically and climatically and otherwise, gains momentum and gains steam, you know, the delicacy, the simplicity of self-realization could turn out to be a useful refuge. That's up to you. Really. So you see, when you find yourself interested, find yourself motivated, fascinated, if you will, by relinquishing the presumption of the subjective I, of the objects of attention, of anything that's pouring in through the sense windows, to discover the profundity of naked attention, then it's possible a certain kind of shift in identity can occur. It doesn't have to be demonstrative or soapboxy or anything like that. No need to be a teacher of anything to teach or anyone to teach. Here it is. It's just, here's naked attention, which is nothing at all, has no home, is not in possession of understanding or perspective. Right presently, and also remarkably behind all that appears, all that solicits one's attention, you know, to be in and of the world, the world of artifacts. Yeah. The world of coming and going. to entertain oneself, pleasure oneself, to avoid suffering, loneliness, aloneness, inconsequentiality. Yeah. Ruminative consciousness, the consciousness of association and acquisition, is all based on lies. Practical lies, impractical lies, and foments or inflates a sense of self instantaneously, long before you even take note of it. And then one operates downstream of this miraculous event where we imagine that, you know, I am I. By virtue of my body and my thoughts and my feelings and sentiments and my artifacts and my belongings, my personal history and my personal aspirations, I am I. Oh, what a drag. You know, even this I am thing that I hear so much about once in a while is ridiculous. Yeah, there's no need to color naked attention with I or am. It's neither I nor am. So as you float back, give yourself permission to float back, float behind the not only what it is that's appearing, but even the apparatus of apparition. If there's no association with what it is that's appearing and or the apparatus that perceives what it is that's appearing, then you drift behind. You drift into naked attention. And the myth of self, the continuity of self, self-importance, coming and going of one's body, yeah, these evaporate. They just evaporate. Gone. Gone, gone, gone beyond. Gate, gate, paragate, parasangate, bodhisvaha. Here it is, here it is. This is the beyond. You see, if we look for a beyond in a place, or based on understanding of some kind, you know, a first-hand experience even, which is absurd, you know, the gleaning of teachers and teachings, the pursuit of the contemplations and purifications and texts, and the cross-referencing religions and all of this heretical worship. All of that, of course, occurs, and why not jump on board, you know, make a million, sell books, doesn't matter. But none of it is, might I say, necessary. Nothing is a vehicle. This is already what it is. With naked attention, it's nothing at all. It doesn't personify. It doesn't take. Prisoners. This doesn't take any prisoners. And here it is, just the way it is. What keeps us bound to the idea of self, or bound to the idea of texts, or gurus, adept stream, entrance, and all other forms of fakirs and fakers, is our own delusional identification. Right? We associate with saints, sinners, and mutants, you know, as a projection of our own presumed identification. Without that identification, everyone can just fuck off. You know, in a nice way. Everyone and everything can just fuck off, because if you are not a product of anything, if you're not causal, if there's no implication for this being the way that it is, then who are we running to for knowledge or understanding? You know, for acknowledgement, or someone to, you know, deride our ego to the point where we'll snap in two and, you know, see something special. This won't happen. The only thing that happens with with gurus and teachers of that kind is a lot of people get hurt and somebody makes a lot of money. Why? Well, because of our own vulnerability, because of the projection of our own identification. We're sitting ducks for all forms of exploitation. And that exploitation includes, you know, all of the big name gurus that, you know, charge a lot of money for you to benefit from their cosmology and their presence and their Q&A and what they have to say about things, you know, whether it's, you know, Jesus or non-duality, you know, and then they give us, you know, tools of the trade and there's CDs and there's books and there's, you know, meetings and all these kinds of things. Four questions and a turnaround, you know, everyone's doing the hokey pokey in the parking lot trying to be free. Free from what? So you see, as long as our principal identification is moving the way that it does, and we find ourselves as a recipient of the artifacts of our own imagination, well then we want healing. We want to be noticed. We want to be relieved. We're insane. And we'll pay out good money and good time, you know, to prove our insanity to others and to beg their intervention so we could be less insane, and that's insane. And that won't stop. Man, it's a good fucking racket if you have the gall to get into it. If you have the urge to celebritize yourself. Yeah. Get plastic surgery. Interview with Alanis Morissette. Look, this isn't anything, but that's not a refusal. It's not a refutation. It's not even true. See, naked attention doesn't have truth. It doesn't have one conclusion, one ideation as contrasted with another. It's not argumentative. It's not going to fucking argue with you or with me. The fuck does it care? See, naked attention sees the entire histrionic hilarity of all that's occurring in its, you know, naked ambient self. And that's what this is, naked ambient self, without S-E-L-F. Naked curious. And less than that, even that goes. What remains? Nothing remains. Here this is in the way that it is, unstoppably so, and yet nothing remains. There's nothing actually here. Nothing becomes of it. It doesn't become better. It doesn't become worse. We might all fucking die, but it doesn't necessarily become better or worse. You see, typically when we look for freedom, you know, spiritual freedom or secular freedom, you know, it's all about how I feel, how we feel, you know, the healing of my wounds, the healing of my ill health, the healing of my obsessive mind, the healing of one thing or another. See, that's what we're interested in. We're interested in state changes, whether it's through perception, whether it's through alchemy, whether it's through, you know, fascinating visions of Krishna and or his flute, of anything at all. And this is the hysteria that you can say is underneath religious thinking, right? Cosmologies of all kinds, whether they're Vedic or Ayurvedic, Buddhist, what have you. You see, naked attention doesn't have any clothes to put on, and yet it wears all this. You could say the only thing that naked attention, or God for that matter, is interested in is costuming. You see, this is a giant costume ball. It's Halloween 24/7, 365, at least on Earth time. It's just Halloween every single day. Everyone's in costume, giving and taking candy. It's a costume ball. Naked attention is wearing all the costumes. If you take yourself to be a particular costume, well, like all of us, you will be a suffering idiot. Whether you're 0.1%, whether you're a Pleiadian, an Arcturian, a Lemurian, whether you're a minority, or whether you're a white supremacist Republican trying to destroy the democracy, still the suffering is there. There's no book. There are no levels. There's no levels. There's no dimensions. There's no book. There's no how-to. These are fantasies. Look, what this is, just for fun, has the remarkable power, the remarkable capacity to do whatever it pleases in any which dimension, to be perceived by any strange conglomeration of, you know, neuronal or tissue or anything at all. I mean, we don't know how a man perceives. We don't know how, you know, a sandstone perceives, or how a quasar perceives, or what they perceive. To presume that they don't perceive is absurd. What do we know about anything? Because our language systems and tactile systems, our opposable thumb, and our neocortex functions in a certain way, then we presume that is the presence and power of sentient animation, and that, you know, any other so-called creature or non-creature that doesn't have these capacities is without perception, is without life. You see, everything that comes out of our mouths, my mouth, our minds, my mind, is just the present folderol of whatever present experience is appearing to be. Serendipitously, impersonally, without duration. It's streaming. It has a streaming, instantaneously, faster than instantaneously, renewable capacity for association and acquisition, for presumption and accusation, characterization. See? Amazingly so. And yet behind it all, it's not that difficult really to get behind it all. Boom, in an instant, you're also behind it all, because you are behind it all. It's not like you have to find out or discover or get to behind it all. You are behind it all. That's already the case. It's strange companion kind of identity. There's the identity of the acquisitive, defining and accusing nature of mind, the nature of artifacts, right, of the subjective eye, of objects and things to do. Yes, the being with, the curious being with, it's full to the brim. And exactly, concomitant, companion with it, naked attention, nothing at all. It's not one that's prior to the other, one is higher or lower than the other. Samadhis can be unconscious and oftentimes depicted as such, unconscious of the world. Yes, samadhis can also be not that. Like, okay, here this is, if it's anything. Conscious, whatever that suggests. Attentive, whatever that might mean. See, without time stamp or location stamp, without having any duration at all, consciousness just dances, flows, flies, dances, flows, flies, is nothing. No objects appear in it. You don't take time enough to call anything, including the way you think you feel about stuff. There's not enough time to say how you feel about anything. Nothing lasts long enough to package it home and send it off to a friend. Streaming, revelatory, novel evaporation is the nature of present experience. we have to assign meaning. In other words, we have to put on the brakes, stop. We have to pretend to stop the streaming, liquidating nature of novelty and derive something from it that suggests I'm having a certain experience, or I have found a certain object, or this is this, and I know what I'm going to do about this, or what I'm going to do about that. You see, we have to pretend to freeze the mystery of being with so that we can have an opinion, right? Have an orientation, say how things are. But all of this occurs in mind, you know, in fantasy, in etheric association. To have a sense of self has to be created as artifacts of etheric association. That something happened before now, that something will happen hence, that something's happening now. What if this is so curiously novel and liquidating at the same time that there has no particular moment has any duration whatsoever, so you can't even use the language or the imposition to suggest that there is now. I mean, all there is now, but there's no now. Now is when? How quickly does now become next? And that next become now, become next, become now, become next, become... You tell me, what's the demarcation in, you know, microseconds or nanoseconds from one moment to the next? And the idea that you're actually inhabiting one moment to the next is just that, it's an idea. And this profound association, constitutes a sense of self. The artifacts of the world and the way that I'm living in it, agreeably or otherwise. Look how silly we are. We're heading straight to the lemmings cliff of mass extinction. Tumbling around. We don't know what to do about anything, what to do with anything. Our consciousness tends to be, you know, hand to mouth, hand to mouth, hand to mouth. We can build, you know, empires and superstructures and the myth of fiat currency. We could permit, you know, very few to become the apparent owners and heirs of, you know, the principal assets of the world. While the other minions and constituents end up with nothing. Yes. Yeah, so we can do all that for sure. But we are impotent. Absolutely impotent when it comes to responding to the finiteness, apparent finiteness of the ecosphere and the mineral kingdoms. Yeah. So the urgency for fornication, not bad. The urgency for industrialization, high cost. The urgency for acquisition, selfishness, self-importance, wealth. Yeah, these are all the drivers behind the insoluble greed that, drives the engine of humankind. Even though most of us, you could say, live simply, well, or underneath, you know, underneath what we might agree are basic standards of living. So it's relatively few of us with the power and privilege to incarcerate others and to use, you know, the principal amounts and percentages of vital energy. Kumbaya, kumbaya, kumbaya. See, is the habit of narration, the habit of becoming subside of their own nature, effortlessly, and not as the result of any activity, not as the result of any commitment, not as the result of any earnestness. The abatement of self is organic. It's acausal. Just like the creation and genesis of self is acausal, so is its abatement. We have all kinds of funny ways of saying things, you know, seeming to suggest processes and patterns and cultivations of all kinds, but no, that's all silliness. The curious presentation of personification is acausal, and its abatement is likewise acausal. And they're both just present, both just so, in equal measure. The orientation of personification comes about involuntarily. And the world of coming and going is made of this personification. And the abatement of this personification, gradually or suddenly, in large measure, is also acausal, completely organic. The revelation of what it is behind the apparent artifacts of living, you could say, kind of, it goes knock, knock, you know, who's there? Oh, nothing at all. Oh, nothing at all, who? Indeed. Sorry. Knock, knock, who's there? Oh, nothing at all. Nothing at all, who? Indeed. I'm laughing at a really bad joke. I'm alone. You see, the slightest artifact that shows up in what you call, one might call, my consciousness. You know, that's kind of like how a snowflake gets going, right? The miraculous crystal pattern of the imagination of one's life occurs because, you know, something has adhered to a speck of dust, right? So the I am, you know, the subjective I, that is a speck of dust. And then the snowflake crystal of all of the horseshit that you could dare imagine occurs in an instant. Sooner than an instant. Under the right conditions, the snowflake of self will melt. It will reveal the speck of dust upon which it originally adhered, and the speck of dust we'll see that it is nothing at all. And here we are. No, this isn't about being clever. There's a lot of clever. This is not about, the art of didactic, the art of discovery, the so-called direct path, or not. And you can find as many elegant, exotic artifacts as you wish here in the being with, here in the crystallization experience, the snowflake experience. One is no better than another. For something to refer to itself as the direct path, forgive me, is the height of hubris. There's no path. There's no direct. There's no from or to. All that appears in mind appears hypnotically so. Association and acquisition, the superlatives of the genesis of self, are made of nothing. To use them for scholarship, for PhD, for interpreting the cosmologies and spiritual and religious works of others, that's a waste of time. And yet, what? No better time spent. You see, the moment we take the slightest hint of an artifact to be so, to be real, well, now we're full of pride. I mean, instantly, faster than we can take notice. And being full of pride is a consequence of finding objects appearing to a subjective eye in what we call narrative experience. Phew. Shit show. And the fornication goes on. Forgive me, nothing at all has a certain kind of, for me at least, delightful absolutism. Meaning that the nature is void of cosmology. The nature is void of objects, or of history, human or otherwise. It doesn't build a temple, a bookshelf, an Akashic record out of the artifacts of itself. You see? See, we don't build a temple, a place or manner of worship, or an Akashic record from the apparent artifacts of experience. See, it just liquidates. It doesn't become anything. There's no record to be kept. If one wants to find a record, commit themselves to a record. Play your favorite record as long as it has a beat and you can dance to it. You know, it's not up to you. The presence of personification, the presence of self, the presumption of, you know, individuation is not up to you. It comes about acausally. You're a product of this elaborate ruse, elaborate imagination, by no will or choice of your own. And its abatement, likewise, occurs acausally, for no reason. And then the entire playing field of what we might refer to as the artifacts of experience is wiped clean. The entire playing field of the artifacts of experience is wiped clean. So it's both existing and non-existing, both present and absent, both novel and evaporative, at the so-called same time, you know, with the same, let's say, vector or photon of attention, right? Existent and non-existent, appearing and not appearing, present and absent, coming and going, all at the same time within the same photon packet. So it has the capacity, obviously, we look at human consciousness and the written artifacts of human consciousness, and we can see just how miraculous the capacity to imagine is and to build, you know, the superstructures of culture and industrialization. Whew. In no time. You know, so the notion of being unenlightened or on a path to pursue or cultivate enlightenment can only operate through the hallucination of having, you know, been present prior to now. Or objectionally present now. To what? To the artifacts of the imagination of living. Sense experience. Coming and going of the body. The coming and going of thoughts and association, sense and impressions. See, it's that within that field, that hypnotic field of being anything at all, that the displeasure arises and the myth of some kind of realization arises as the ultimate ameliorative, as the ultimate remedy or solution. Ha. Ha ha. Ha ha. And then this is soul. You see, this idea is soul. This meditation retreat, that meditation retreat, this judge your neighbor. Mindfulness exercises. The didactic of the direct path. Cleverness of radiant presence. You see? It's all shamanic impulse, shamanic hypnosis. Makes us think that we're onto something or on our way or utilizing the capacity for understanding, cultivating something, coming to clever and subtle appreciations about things as concerns ourselves. But this is all sleight of hand. It's hypnosis. How is it possible to suggest there's nothing at all in the midst of all that there is? How is it remotely possible that the profundity of sense and sensual mental experiencing is empty? Fuck if I know. As the habit and movement of narration, let's say, relaxes some, one discovers other potencies for being with the nature of presence, the nature of attention, perception, whatever consciousness might be. There are other potencies. In addition to sentiment, sensation, and mentation. Other potencies. And as these potencies awaken, become noticed, then you could say one occupies or abides in these companion potencies and takes less interest in sensuality, sentimentality, and mentation. So what does it feel like? What does the presence of presence feel like when there's no loyalty, no fealty to sensation, sentiment, or mentation? That's perhaps what there is to discover, how to awaken and abide in the companion potencies. This is not a question of belief or faith at all. These potencies are beyond the perimeters of belief and faith, of strategy and purification, of, you know, ethical, moral, human behavior. One's more subtle or nuanced potencies are transcendent of space, time, and accusation. So as we inhabit those potencies, let's say, what we thought was the universe or our place in the universe, well, why shouldn't it change profoundly? Why shouldn't it alter profoundly? From the world of objects and things and the coming and going of myself to inexplicable emptiness, inexplicable abiding, inexplicable simplicity, inexplicable beauty. Because it's gone beyond the familiar perimeter of sensation, sentiment, and mentation. So then the world, if there were one, appears according to those sensitivities. And what's there to argue about then? The presence of a thing, the absence of a thing, this is no longer relevant. Whether there's enlightenment or not enlightenment, or how to get there or not, it's no longer relevant. The baggage of my persona, you know, as a earthbound creature in the midst of socioeconomic spoilage, is profound in the way that it's profound, and it reinforces, of course, the sense of sensation, sentiment, and mentation. And the I, the sense of I, the pride of I that accompanies all that. But companion to that, and companion to that, is nothing at all. No threat to self. Nothing to sell, nothing to convince anybody of. The abatement of personified consciousness happens of its own accord and peeks through arguably your entire life. Always peeking through. Always soliciting attention. Always wishing to come out. So if you find yourself somehow curiously interested in whatever the topic of self-realization might be, and I sure as fuck don't know what it is, but you find yourself curious to discover, right? Find yourself with some kind of existential or circumstantial disquietude. You want to get a little deeper into the pit of self. You know, not just become a serf or a wage slave to a dysfunctional society. You want to cultivate some dignity, camaraderie with the sacred. Something that's not belittled by the argumentative hubris of, you know, human beings. Yeah. Something quieter, more dignified, absolute, sovereign. So that at least in your own soul, you're not a beggar. You don't presume something or someone has some kind of authoritative advantage that knows more than you, deeper than you. As long as we presume someone or something knows more than us, deeper than us, we are our beggars. We supplicate ourselves to the imagination of the authority that we create. And if we don't do that, if somehow we find the inspiration or the courage to leap past the impulse for creating authority, well, what happens to our consciousness then? What is this? If there's no one or no thing other than whatever presence is. But there is no knowledge, there is no authority, there's no genesis, there's no tradition, there's no ritual. What is this when it's not about anything? Simplicity sucks you in, draws you in. It's free to imagine whatever it wishes. Moodscapes, landscapes, moodscapes, landscapes appear unobscured from nowhere. The abatement of narration, the abatement of personification reveals companion capacities, companion sensitivities. that foment or suggest or imply their own profound reality, which has nothing to do with sensation, sentiment, or meditation. So naked attention is freed of the presumption of self. The momentum, the inertia of the miraculous forces that suggest self, that hypnotize, gets softer and softer and softer, and abate gradually, all at once, always on tap, impossible to dictate. The softening is not through mantra, it's not through meditation, not through diet, it's not through moral cultivation of moral ethical behavior. The abatement of personification is acausal. It doesn't come about by virtue of any effort that's made or not made. It's exactly presence itself. This is where realization or liberation is to be discovered. Not through the movement of understanding or piecing things together. Any kind of reference or relevance. Realization is this, it's exactly this. Alchemy occurs, for which you could take no credit. One's interest leads you there. One's affection leads you there. One's impatience, a disappointment, leads us here. All things that appear to come before now were contributory in equal measure to suchness, this presence. The discovery of companion capacities to recalibrate the myth of myself in the world. I could go on. It seems like a... I can't thank you, two viewers, whomever you might be, and those of you in the chat room for keeping me company. Sorry I didn't respond to anything specifically. Maybe I just had a few things to get off the chat. Anyway, gracious thanks for being here, and I'll see you again.